people really are like, oh, wow, when's Waymo going to kill Uber? I'm like, I don't think Waymo's going to kill Uber anytime soon.
Oh, no. Is Tesla going to kill Uber?
Like, Uber literally doesn't own a single fleet in their entire, they have 6 or 7 million drivers around the world. They don't own a single car in that fleet. Not one. Waymo has released a ton of data and stats already that, like, they're getting in 90% fewer accidents. I'm thinking about getting a new car right now, and it's like, I don't know if I can get a non-Tesla because that FSD is so damn good.
What my gut tells me is going to be one of the quickest evolving, fast-moving industries, this whole, like, whole transportation thing with the advent of autonomy and that autonomy hitting scale. All right, so we have Harry Campbell, the rideshare guy. Harry is a very interesting guest that we have. He reached out, and it was one of those things where we're like, wow, this would be an excellent conversation. And I'll sort of let you go into the spiel of what you do here, Harry. But just at a very high level, he's had extreme amounts of experience in the rideshare business and the rideshare sort of like gig environment. He's had foot on the ground. He's talked to a lot of people. And what's interesting about this conversation is that, you know, as the audience knows, we focus heavily on a Musk industry, specifically Tesla, and Tesla's gearing up to get into the rideshare business, the robotaxi business, the taxi service business, the rideshare business potentially. So, Harry, I'll let you sort of update the audience on what you do, where people find you, and then we'll turn this into an amazing conversation. So go for it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm excited to be here. And I guess I should have been in my Tesla and, you know, kind of doing a little Uber so we could match with you in the Cybertruck. For those who are, you know, listening, you got to watch the background and see what everyone's up to. But yeah, like you said, I used to be an aerospace engineer for Boeing about 11 years ago. That was my last career. And I started driving for Uber and Lyft 11 years ago on the side, just to kind of try it and check it out. And as you know, at the time, the companies were small and they just exploded ever since. So I kind of like to joke, I've basically just been riding Uber and Lyft's coattails ever since. And, you know, I started a media business covering, you know, first it was a website and a YouTube channel. Now we have podcasts, courses, conferences. You know, we do consulting, advising, startups for equity. We have a fund where we invest in early stage companies. So really anything, you name it, but it kind of all stems from basically covering Uber and Lyft and really covering them from that driver perspective. And I think that's kind of what's unique about this industry, about Tesla, you know, where these industries where you can actually cover the products, where you can try them, where you don't have to like interview some expert, you can be the expert. And so I think that's kind of what a lot of people have related about your content, Farzad, and also mine, is that I'm going out there, you know, I was driving Uber, and now we've got a number of contributors all over the country. So that's kind of our area of expertise. Anything Uber, Lyft, driving, gig economy, rideshare, that's sort of where we've basically been covering for the past 11 years. And now that it's starting to intersect with autonomy and Tesla and all that launch, like, I'm not an expert in Tesla, I'm not an expert in autonomy, but obviously if they're running a rideshare company, I think that intersection is where I myself am starting to spend a lot of time. I just launched a new newsletter called the Driverless Digest, where we do a weekly newsletter and analysis posts and interviews, really kind of talking about, you know, really that angle, right? Like, hey, Tesla is going to launch a robotaxi network. Like, what can they learn from Uber? What do they need to do? Do they need to partner with Uber? Like, all these discussions that obviously that you're covering and others. So that's kind of the genesis and the evolution.
Awesome. So I guess I'll get started right away. So what, if anything, have you heard from boots on the ground about companies like Waymo, about companies like Tesla that are looking to enter sort of this driverless thing, right? Is there fear? Yeah. Is there doubt? Is there an embrace? Like, are people embracing it? Are people doubting it? Just give me a high level sort of like,
vibe? Yeah, I mean, really at a high level, I mean, since Waymo started offering driver, I mean, they've been doing it in Phoenix, in Arizona for a while, but really since they launched in Los Angeles, you know, 6-9 months ago, San Francisco, 12 months ago, I think that was kind of the big inflection point. Because I think with a lot of these like new, exciting industries, you know, it's always like talking about what's going to happen, right? Obviously, Tesla fans, you know, are very, you know, Elon often ends up delivering, right? But timelines are delayed or, you know, things happen. But I think that, like, for me, that was the big inflection point. Waymo, you can go call a Waymo in LA, San Francisco, Phoenix, Austin, Atlanta coming soon, right? And you can literally be in the back of a driverless vehicle that's going to take you from A to B. And so I think that inflection point really unleashed, you know, Waymo ended up raising $5 billion, which doesn't help, you know, right after that. But I think that inflection point really kind of crystallized it for a lot of people, you know, for Uber drivers specifically, for example, like they're not big fans of AVs, you know, to be honest, like they hate them, right? Because they're driving and now you have robo competition, right? And so it's hard to not say that, hey, more drivers is a bad thing, right? More robo drivers. Obviously, there's, you know, no one wants their job taken, and really no one wants it taken by a robot. That doesn't feel good. So I think that's kind of the stage that we're at. And then, of course, with Tesla, you know, I know your audience are obviously huge Tesla fans. I'm sure a lot of people listening and watching right now have used full self-driving. It's an amazing product. I'm thinking about getting a new car right now. And it's like, I don't know if I can get a non-Tesla because that FSD is so damn good. Like, I've been thinking about a Rivian, and I love the look of the Rivian SUV, but it's like, I don't know how their, you know, whatever their FSD wannabe product is going to, you know, be. And I really have gotten used to it. And so, you know, I personally, and I'm sure we'll get into it, like, I personally feel that, you know, I wouldn't get in the back of a Tesla, you know, at least my Tesla, with full self-driving just yet. But obviously, they're pretty close. And, you know, Waymo, you know, is out there giving rides, 250,000 trips per week. It's still small, though, relative to Uber. I think a lot of people forget that Uber, far as that, if you don't mind, I'll question you. How many trips do you think Uber does in a single day around the world?
Probably 1,000x Waymo, if I were to guess.
Yeah, I don't know about 1,000x, but it's like 8, 9, 10 million trips a day. So yeah, it's probably, and you know, Waymo's doing 250,000 trips a week. So this is my first meeting of the day, so I'm not even going to attempt to do the math, but you can sort of see like, hey, wow, Waymo's big. They're growing. They've got a fleet of 1,500 vehicles, but it's still actually pretty small. Very small compared to, you know, Uber's global and even Uber's US footprint. So I don't know. I think it's kind of a really cool, exciting time, lots of opportunity. And then, of course, obviously, when you throw Tesla into the mix, which I'm sure we'll get into, with honestly a very different business model than Waymo as they approach the sort of robo-taxi opportunities. I think that's kind of like those three companies, Uber, Waymo, and Tesla, are, you know, basically every headline, every single week in my newsletter is one of those three companies because they're kind of the biggest, brightest, and, you know, most exciting.
So I guess let me pick your brain on this, because I'll sort of tell you where my head is at. I'm sure you know where my head is at with this. And I'm really curious to see how you're viewing this and sort of test this thesis. So I really think that, you know, Uber has done this great service and this great product where they figured out how to fill drivers that have cars, that have time, with people that are looking for a ride, that they don't really have to deal with a taxi company. They can just pull up their phone and be like, I need to go to from A to B, and there is open bandwidth for people to go and be like, yo, okay, I can fill that service for you. And they've created this much more useful ecosystem versus calling your local taxi company and then nobody picking up, and then trying a different taxi company, nobody's picking up, and then you get picked up in a car where the car's beat up and the driver hates you, right?
Yeah.
It's like just they've made that experience much, much better. But I think in the land of self-driving cars, especially with companies that have the scale to put out multiple hundreds of thousands of them or potentially millions of them per year at some point in the near future or even far future. But once that exists, it feels like companies like Uber or this rideshare economy has a chance to be heavily disrupted, because you're yanking the most quote unquote expensive part of the equation out of the equation, which is the driver's time. And then you're starting to offer the service that doesn't have a driver. So from my perspective, it feels like this is a point in time where there's going to be some heavy disruption in rideshare. So I'm just curious to get your take on that. Do you think that's a fair take? I'd love to pick your brain on this.
Yeah, I would say that there is the potential for heavy disruption, right? I think with Waymo, you know, probably I do, you know, because now Uber and Lyft and all these other companies are public companies. So we do a lot of investor calls, you know, people who have billions of dollars invested in these companies. They want to know, what are drivers feeling? What are they saying? Probably my last 10 to 15 investor calls that I've done over the past year, they've all just been hijacked, and people want to know about Waymo versus Uber, right? Because they're here, because they're now. And I actually think Waymo is less of a direct threat to Uber, and we can get into the reasons why, but it really has to do with the business model. Like, I go back to Waymo has 1,500 cars. They just announced they're going to add another, you know, couple thousand by next year. Okay, cool. They'll be at 3,500 cars next year. Lyft, for example, they actually own a fleet of 15,000 vehicles under their FlexDrive program. So they're already one of the biggest owners of vehicles in the rideshare space. And just to put that right, like, Waymo's going to have 3,500 by next year. Lyft literally already has 15,000. Like, Lyft is tiny compared to Uber, right? So like, they're still a fraction when you think about like that vehicle ownership. People forget, like, cars are expensive, man. $50,000 for a car times, you know, 1,000 cars, right? You really starts to add up. $50 million fleet, right? or whatever the numbers are. And so I think that kind of that business model difference is important to note. And then, like, when you think about, that's sort of where I've been most excited by Tesla, because they are going to approach it with a very different business model. And I think, you know, like, you've talked about this, Elon has talked about this. And I think he's obviously, like, probably rightfully so, as the CEO, like, very bullish on their approach. I'm a little more skeptical. We can get into the reasons why, but, you know, they've already got millions of cars on the road, right? And so they can kind of, and potentially get those vehicles onto the platform and actually like start to compete from a number, you know, have they have the potential to compete with Uber when it comes to fleet size, when it comes to, you know, like quality of the product experience, right? Whereas Waymo, it's just going to take much longer for them to scale up, right? And so I think that's kind of like, people really are like, oh, wow, when's Waymo going to kill Uber? I'm like, I don't think Waymo's going to kill Uber anytime soon. Like Tesla has the potential to kill, or maybe not kill Uber, but, you know, really compete head to head with Uber. But it's because it's such a different business model, if that makes sense.
Thank you to today's sponsor of the podcast, Rebellionaire. Rebellionaire is an investment firm that understands people like you, who I'm assuming are big time Tesla stock investors that are willing to have an outsized position in a name. Whereas with other investment firms, we might get the cold shoulder. They might say, this is kind of a crazy idea. Why are you going so heavy in a name? Rebellionaire fully understands why you would do that, because Matt and Bradford, who run Rebellionaire, are both retail Tesla investors. What's very interesting about Rebellionaire is that they've done very unique research with companies like Tesla. They've done cross-country FSD trips. They do unique analysis around the energy sector. They understand the robotics space very closely. And so they fully understand how that company is behaving and what their long-term potential is. And so where Rebellionaire can offer a lot of value to somebody like you is that they can help you manage that position, as well as figuring out how to get you to your financial goals. And they employ things like financial planning for you. They might trim or add to the Tesla position. They might do covered calls and other strategies, things that perhaps you might want to do or might not even know is available to you. They can help you from that perspective. And so if you're interested in Rebellionaire, we have a link for that in the description and comment section below. You can go to rebellionaire.com/Farzad, rebellionaire.com/Farzad, and that's how they'll know that we sent you. And now back to the podcast.
Hans, you want to jump in? And
yeah, I just was thinking about the fleet size is obviously the biggest factor there, that if you're, you know, you have a service, like you said, that's offering in the, you know, roughly 10 million rides a day service, then you've got to have that, you know, at least hundreds of thousands of cars, you know, total in your network in order to do something like that. And it's obvious even for Tesla, it's going to take some time to get to that level of scale. And it is something that when you think about that overall size, that the you realize that Uber kind of does have some time to deal with the entrance of what, you know, whether it's Tesla, whether it's someone else, obviously even more time if it is someone like Waymo that moves a lot slower and is growing slower. But that said, I think that once the, you know, once Tesla actually has those robo taxis that are operating, to your point earlier about, you know, your investor calls where you're seeing people saying, hey, you know, is Waymo going to kill Uber? Like that conversation will quickly switch over once there is a commercial service that's available with Tesla to, oh no, is Tesla going to kill Uber? And I think that's going to be, you know, the hot topic for a lot of people who manage a lot of money very, very quickly.
Definitely. Well, and let me also, you know, Farzad, you asked a good question about, you know, sort of Uber and like the innovation that they've really brought to the marketplace. Because obviously everyone knows Uber, they know Lyft, they open the app, they call a ride. And, you know, they don't always maybe understand though, like how that's happening with such reliability. Like when's the last time you opened the Uber app in the United States and couldn't have an Uber within five to seven minutes. Like maybe it's not for the price you want. Maybe it was really damn expensive, but it's always available no matter where you are, especially in the United States. Small, big, you know, city. And obviously there's some places, you know, if you're out in the middle of nowhere, it may not work or may not work nearly as well. But like any major city where all the rides happen, it's very reliable. And that's really Uber's number one KPI. Like the thing that they care most about is basically when you open the app, there's a car available and there's a 5 to 7 minute ETA. I had a Lyft executive on my panel at a conference recently, autonomous vehicle conference. And I asked him, what do you know, do they even track that? And they literally don't even track reliability. Like there's always a car available. Like they don't even look at that anymore. They know that there's always a car available. What they now look at is like, what's the ETA? 3 to 5 minutes is, you know, usually what they're targeting, right? And the way that they do that is through surge pricing. And it's through what I call this variable fleet, right? So I signed up to drive for Uber 11 years ago. Like I already owned a car. I own a car today, right? When there's higher earnings potential, I would go onto the network and I would drive. As soon as I log off, I go home, I charge my car, you know, I clean my car, someone pukes in the back of my car, I handle that, right? Not ideal. But you know, all these things that like cleaning, maintenance, you know, I get in an accident, I have to worry about that. Like Uber literally doesn't own a single fleet in their entire, they have 6 or 7 million drivers around the world. They don't own a single car in that fleet, not one, right? And so I think that sort of highlights, right, the fact that like, if they have that ability for like millions of people to bring them online, that variable supply, and then as soon as they go offline, they don't have to worry. They literally don't even have to, not even not pay for them. They don't even have to worry about them. Where do they park? Where do they charge? Like Waymo has a depot here in Los Angeles, right near SoFi Stadium where the LA Chargers play football. And it's like prime real estate. You know what I mean? Like I can only imagine like what it costs to put in, you know, install chargers and all that. And like the reason why they need that depot there is because the highest density of trips are in the core areas of Los Angeles, San Francisco. You can't go put a depot like out an hour away because then now all the Waymos have to go drive out there, lose charge, lose range, lose time, drive back, right? So your real estate costs are actually higher because you have that fleet and you have that charge, right? And so you can start to see this is where, you know, I think I'm, you know, I think optimistic about Tesla's chances against Uber, you know, with the big caveat, like if or when they launch, you know, kind of a self-driving platform, you know, kind of like a full self-driving platform that would be capable of robo-taxi rides, because a lot of those problems that Waymo has, like Tesla may not, they still have some, but they won't have a lot of the big ones.
I think that the thing that's the most interesting thing to me about the Tesla approach, and, you know, you mentioned that you do have some skepticism about some stuff, so I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. But I think the thing that I always get so, like, stuck on when I'm thinking about the landscape of self-driving is under the assumption that Tesla does reach unsupervised robotaxi. So, you know, the what we're hearing from the company is that in June in Austin here, we're going to get the 10 to 20 ones that can do it, okay? And with the assumption that that is successful, that that trial is successful and they're able to successfully navigate a self-driving fleet of Teslas that don't require a driver within a region, okay, that all of a sudden that becomes a software update to millions of cars. And all of a sudden you've turned on a fleet size that's equivalent to 1/4 to 1/3 the size of Uber's entire global fleet. Just through the cars we've manufactured. Now, of course, there's regulatory that's there. There's making sure you have enough miles, safety miles there. It's just a time scale question versus like a capability of getting it out the door question.
Well, then also to his point, the additional infrastructure that's required, since they do own the cars, of building out the depots and the charging and managing all of the fleets. So that is kind of an additional orthogonal aspect to all of this.
And so do you view, so let me ask a two-part question. Number one, sort of what are some of the skepticisms you have about Tesla's approach? And then number two, is it fair to say that in a future state, like an Uber-esque company, or maybe it's Uber, I don't know, does it become more of a fleet management platform than a rideshare platform? Is that how they transform? I'd love to pick your brain on those two things.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's start with maybe the skepticism around, you know, what it would take. So I sort of honestly, like, one of the reasons I was excited to chat with you, because I figured you would ask me about this, and I kind of want to, you know, I haven't like done a lot of interviews or writing just yet about it. So I'm sort of like still, you know, kind of formulating. But like when people come to me and they want to start a new rideshare company, which has probably happened 300 times over the past 10 years, some more, you know, often not very well funded. I mean, the biggest thing is like it's expensive. And it's very difficult, like, to start a rideshare company, right? And then logistically, like, what you need would be, you know, kind of a rider app and a driver app. I think that is pretty doable for Tesla. You also need insurance and licensing. So licensing, pretty straightforward. I think you just tweeted or shared something about, maybe one of your videos, you were talking about, like, the Texas rules for Tesla, you know, that it kind of, like, could open up statewide. And actually, a lot of, like, in California, the CPUC, the California Public Utilities Commission, also is the one that regulates at a state level. So I actually, like, applying to be, you know, whether it's a TNC, which is Uber and Lyft, a transportation network company. Waymo actually has TCP in California, which is like a transportation charter party or something like that. So it's sort of more of like an Uber black car designation. So you need a license with the state, and then you need commercial insurance. So really, like, the licensing, it, you know, there's some moving parts, but like, it's doable. It actually, the insurance, I think, is the big interesting thing. Cause like, I don't think people realize, like, if you're not in the, if you're in the shared fleet business, like, insurance isn't your number one headache, whether you're sharing cars, you know, on Turo or whatever, or you're renting cars or you're Uber themselves. Uber just has been talking a lot. Like, if you've taken an Uber in Los Angeles, for example, as a customer recently, they actually are showing now on the passenger receipt, and they're kind of like bitching that, like, hey, 40% of what you're paying now is actually going to insurance costs in California, right? So it's like, and Texas is actually very high too for some reason. So it's like, you know, they get sued all the time. Drivers honestly drive kind of crazy. You know, they're like in a rush. They're not making as much money as they used to. You know, they really are incentivized kind of indirectly. Like, the faster they go, the more trips they can do per hour, the more money they can make. And their pay has gone down over the past few years because there's more supply of drivers. So you have a lot of kind of incentives basically, you know, leading to this higher insurance cost. So like right now, 40% of what you pay on a $100 ride, $40 is going straight to the insurance companies, like kind of a waste, right? And so you could imagine that like in a robo-taxi network, Waymo has released a ton of data and stats already that like they're getting in 90% fewer accidents. So I actually, you know, think insurance for, you know, like a good robo-taxi network will actually be, they might still get sued, you know, occasionally, and there's some liability issues, but I actually think insurance could go down. So that could be another, you mentioned like the big cost savings is taking out the driver. The other big cost savings could be the insurance, right? And so I think on the Tesla side, like the big thing I'm watching with this robo-taxi launch, because, you know, it's sort of like I personally wouldn't get into the back of like a Tesla, well, at least my Tesla. Like, you know, I feel like there's some difference you could probably explain to me, like between the hardware and the software. But like my Tesla, you know, like I wouldn't sit in the back of it like I would in a Waymo. But if, like, that's why I'm watching, and, you know, but other people I think gladly would, right? And so it's sort of subjective, right? Like, what's a robo, like, how do we know Tesla is ready for a robo-taxi network? Like, some people are going to do it, some aren't. But one thing that I think isn't subjective that I'm watching is the insurance piece. Who's going to insure these vehicles? If Tesla goes out and is like, hey, I'm like, right now when they're like, hey, it's FSD beta, you're on your own. I'm like, oh, great. I hit a curb on Mulholland Drive here, you know, on FSD, and it was my fault, right? I had to pay to get it fixed. Not a big deal, but cost me a few hundred bucks, right? But if my robo-taxi smashes into another car and kills some 19-year-old, you know, teenager that has like million, that's like a, you know, I don't even know what they call that. It's like a mega insurance, you know, kind of liability, right? Like, I want Tesla on the hook for that. Like, I don't want to be on the hook for that, or Tesla's insurer. So that's the big thing to me. Like, that's kind of what I'm looking at. Like, who's going to have the insurance liability? Because that is really the big thing when it comes to robo-taxis.
Yeah, so let me actually walk you through that, and then Hans can come in and sort of be the super nerd techie guy that can walk through. So let me ask you this. What cars do you have? Do you know if they're Hardware 3 or Hardware 4 FSD cars?
I have a Tesla Model Y from about 4 years ago.
So that's some Hardware 3. Okay.
Yeah.
So your vehicle is running what is right now one full version behind the Hardware 4 cars. So the Hardware 4 cars right now are running on version 13. That your Hardware 3 Model Y is basically the same exact car I have. It's 2021 Model Y.
Yeah,
it's
got a Hardware 3 computer. I just pulled up my Tesla app. It says I've got 39,000 miles on it, software V12. So 2025, 14.3.1. And I believe it's from about that same time frame.
Does it say 12.6.4 probably somewhere?
It says, 12.6.4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
isn't the Tesla app great? You can just pull it up and be like, wait, what car did I buy? When did I buy it? What am I on?
It's pretty awesome. Yeah. So the big breakthrough that Tesla has had here in the last really 6 months is they released this version 13, which is quite a step change above version 12 capabilities, but it's only for the Hardware 4 vehicles. So it's sort of these newer computers that are out there. Tesla said, you know, the Hardware 3s are going to get swapped out with the Hardware 4. It's going to take time. They're going to do it. They're going to make it right. That's what they said. So we'll see when that gets done. But then the newer Hardware 4 vehicles are running V13, and V13 is the one that has that huge breakthrough, especially with Model 3 and Model Y.
Gotcha.
Where if you sort of track the fleet and you track people and the feedback they're given with that car is that they're going thousands of miles between interventions. Mm. So basically it's like it's performing. And Hans's car actually is a brand new, not brand new Model 3, but a newer Model 3. So maybe do you want to give more sort of feature.
Yeah, and I guess that kind of cracks into the argument though, right, that they've got millions of vehicles that are like ready to deploy in the network if only, you know, a fraction of them, right, like the newer ones are sort of like been hesitant to criticize, but like that's why I sort of say like my car, right, I wouldn't get into the back, but I think it sounds like, you know, these newer cars with, I mean, it makes sense, newer hardware, newer software is better, right?
Yeah, the one thing to keep in mind there, though, and I'll give it to Hans. So Tesla manufactured 500,000 of these last quarter, and they were all basically Harbor Force, right? So they have built-in capacity to crank out close to 2 million Harbor 4 in basically a year's time. Go for it.
In a year, yeah. Yeah, and it is a fair observation. The way that this tends to work so far, and we'll see, is that the hardware 3 cars continue to get better. They're just behind what the bleeding edge is on hardware 4. And it was just here in the last, 6 months ago that they actually started to utilize the full functionality of these hardware for computers and cars. Mm-hmm. They've been out for a little while, but the software that they were running was the same from version to version. And now recently they've started to take advantage of some of the extra resources that they have on those chips. And then the cameras have significantly higher resolution. And so I think that's one of the big drivers in the performance difference between the hardware 3 and the hardware 4 cars is just that it has a better, clearer picture of the world around it with the updated cameras. And so because it can see better, it can drive a little better. And then, you obviously need some more processing power in order to handle that, significantly higher resolution on those cameras. So supposedly the cyber cabs that they had at that, 1010 event last year, those were running early versions of this version 13 software that now is released to customers. So that's kind of where, the hardware sits today.
Yeah. Well, and that's sort of where it's like, honestly, Tesla, people have very strong positive, negative opinion. Like I'm kind of in the middle. Like I'm probably pretty rare. I feel like maybe, more bullish than bearish. yeah, there you go. Is that a compliment? Thank you, Farzad. That's sort of where, Tesla's going to launch something in June, and like all the Tesla haters and be like, this is shit. This is totally, and all the Tesla fans be like, this is great. This is amazing, right? And so that's sort of where I'm looking for things like insurance. Like, who's going to pay insurance, right? Because that tells me, like, if Tesla goes and covers insurance on all those vehicles, like, they're feeling really confident. If they're like, oops, driver who owns this car, you got to cover that. I'm like, now I'm a little skeptical, right? Because, like, they're not putting their money where their mouth is, or like, hey, our insurance company, someone has to have that risk and liability. And so I think that'll be kind of a telling factor. So if I'm kind of recapping my skepticism of the Tesla Robotaxi, it's like, who pays the insurance? I'm kind of learning from you guys, like it's only the new vehicles that probably are going to be rolling out to a Robotaxi network, but sounds like, maybe 500,000 a quarter. But that also kind of leads me to my third thing. And like, I'm not dead set on these, so you guys might be able to change my mind on some of this, but I'm kind of basing it off my, 11 years of experience of, watching and operating and, with these rideshare companies. And I think the other thing is like, who's going to want to put their brand new Tesla on a robotaxi network, right? Because like this is one thing we've been carefully watching with Waymo. Like we had an article on the rideshare guy for a while that was like, had a really good title, but it was basically like how to handle pukers. Like, man, if you don't know what you're doing, like you get your car gets puked in, like people really treat the car poorly when there's a human in the car. Right. Think about it. Friday, Saturday night, all the times where you get the most number of rides, like work, the peak demand for rideshare is Monday through Friday rush hour going to and then from work. And then Friday, Saturday nights, what we call the party hours. Right. And then obviously any big events, holidays, New Year's Eve, stuff like that. People are drinking. There's a lot of volume. Right. So there's a lot of trips happening. People honestly, like they really do not take good care of the cars. It's kind of like, that's one of the things that sucks about being an Uber driver. The small stuff, they slam the door, they eat in the car, they drink, they bring beverages. I've had some crazy stuff happen. They try to have sex in the car, you got to like adjudicate, there's some like bad stuff that happens in the car. People have been drinking. That's with a human in the car. Like imagine, when there's, and we track this every week, we kind of have like a AVs and humans behaving badly in our Driverless Digest newsletter. And, we're starting to see, especially like right now, Waymo is just early adopters, like the big fans. Once it goes to like the masses and starts reaching, millions of people a week, like unfortunately you're going to have people that treat it really poorly, that, don't take good care of the car. And so I think that's like a big thing that, hey, if I have a brand new, $50,000-$60,000 Model Y, I put this onto the Robotaxi network. I think the economics are for sure compelling that I can make some money back, but like someone pukes in my car. Oh man, my kids are in this car. Like this car is never going to be the same. Farzad, you're in our Cybertruck right now. now, like, do you want someone, you know, peeing on your back seats, like all the crazy stuff that happens? And
of course
not. It really like a lot of this stuff isn't one in a million either. Like if you drive enough, someone will puke in the car. Like,
so let me ask you this:
2-3 trips an hour. So
what percentage of trips, like what so out of 100 trips, how many of those turn out to be, let's say, something that devalues the car, either through puking, damaging? Do you have any stats around that out of curiosity?
I don't have any stats around that, but I would say, one, it depends when and where you drive, right? There are some drivers who don't like driving at nights for this very reason. So I think that's kind of like one argument, you know, that you could sort of say, like, against my own, right? If I'm going to steel man it, okay, maybe you only do, you know, commuting hours. Like people going to and from work, probably no one's going to be hammered, right? Most likely. I can't make any guarantees, but that would probably be 0 out of 100, right? That you could kind of find, you know, those types of trips where you're just going to get like normal wear and tear on the car. And, you know, maybe you want to get like a car wash and a, you know, quick vacuum after, before it kind of resumes into personal use, right? But it is high frequency, right? It is high volume, right? So like a lot of people coming in and out, it's just like wear and tear on your car, especially if it's brand new. So I kind of imagine like no one, like, you know, when you get a new car, you got that new car smell, you probably don't want to put it on the robotaxi network if you're combining, right? If you're using that like personal and commercial use, right? But like to answer your question directly, like if you go and do the party hours, I mean, honestly, like for human drivers, if you know what you're doing, it should happen pretty rarely. Like we have an whole article. It's like how to spot them. Like if they're, you get to the pickup location, they're not there. They're like, oh, I'm on, you know, 2 streets over. Like shit, red flag. Like this guy's too drunk to even figure out where I am. Like maybe I cancel the ride and cut my losses right here. They can't find me. Cut, you know, like it depends how cutthroat you want to be, but like the best, most savvy drivers can kind of avoid them. And, you know, maybe it's like 1 out of 100. You just, you know, they snuck one in and, you know, you see them and you're like, oh crap, this person's really wasted. You know, you got, you know, but the good drivers, they got a puke bag ready. You know, they roll down the windows, they put them on the side. But you know, it might be like 5 out of 100. It might be 10 out of 100 if there's no human, you know, if it's doing all kind of high volume Friday, Saturday night trips. And then a lot of the other stuff is like, you know, if you're here in California, we tell drivers, hey, you got to have a towel in your car because you do a lot of beach pickups, right? Like people are assholes. They get in the car, their butt's all wet. They sit down and now the next passenger gets in and they get into a wet seat, right? People bring their dogs in, right? Every animal is a service animal when you're on driving Uber, right? You know, it sheds, you know, makes a little bit of a mess. It's nothing like bad, but it's all stuff that like human drivers have to like either handle before the ride and kind of avoid, or, you know, deal with during or deal with after.
So I think these are all like super, super helpful, like very valuable insights. I think, so as I'm thinking through it, it's like, this is why something like a robotaxi could be even more valuable. Because you can customize the use cases. Like let's set it aside and say, okay, the overlap of people that own the car, that want to own the vehicle and have it as their own robotaxi, but mm-hmm. also rent it out. Let's say that's a very small percentage of the total fleet. But then you can also say, okay, so actually, let me ask you this question first. What percentage of total trips are those? Because I know like Friday, Saturday, those night times, you're going to get huge peaks. But what's the total percentage of total trips in the week that is that sort of high traffic, high puke, high, you know, crazy people as a total percentage of the trips?
It's probably more like 10% during the week, right? Because it's really only like Thursday night, college areas, you know, like some people, you know, it's very, honestly, it's only like Thursday night college areas, you know, that's the only other like weekday, maybe Friday night, obviously. But like other than like Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, or the big holidays, the big events. But like, that's kind of the tricky thing. That's where Waymo is, you know, in kind of a tricky spot, because those peaks to troughs are so high. Like one of the execs, the Lyft exec I had on my panel, he said on this panel, he said, like, on a normal week, our peak is 6x the average, right? So like they need 6x the number of vehicles for just like a couple hours here and there during a week, right? And those trips, remember, those are the highest paying trips, right? That's when the most surge is on. That's when the highest revenue potential is there. So those trips, like not all trips are created equal. Like a little $5 trip, you know, taking a college kid to a bar, that's $6. Who cares? $10, who cares? But like someone paying $200 to get home Saturday night, right? Going an hour or 20 minutes, right? When high surge pricing, no one wants to drive during that time. Those are very valuable. So I think that's kind of the other thing to remember. No two trips are created equal.
Yeah, no, that's very helpful. But I wonder, like, this is where, you know, are there markets that are going to open up that say, okay, these specific robotaxis, like let's say the trough level, let's say the assume 80-20 rule, the 20% mm-hmm. are your crazies, but those are also your highest potential earners, right?
Yeah.
But then that's where you're going to have like a huge surge, okay? Is there a way to sort of segment the fleet or whatever, you know,
sure,
however we think about this? It's like, okay, so like the fleet for the crazies, the interior is going to be customized. You know how like in the old days, people would like wrap their sofas in like the saran wrap? You know what I'm saying? Like there are solutions that you could put in place that potentially could mitigate those things. But then the other, on the flip side too, is that because the holding cost and like the idling cost of these robotaxis is going to be so low, right? Because there's not going to be a driver in the car. The only cost you're going to incur is just depreciation and vampire drain from the battery, which might be like a, I don't know, like a cent an hour, whatever that is. All of a sudden, you've opened up a market for, let's say, like nighttime deliveries, nighttime shuttling of transportation, like even just food delivery stuff, like Uber Eats, what they're doing today. You could just now, these robotaxis could be very useful in those scenarios. All of a sudden, you have like a brand new market where the cost of transport plummets because you don't have that driver. And so like that's like the sort of analysis that the robotaxi network or the robotaxi network opens up, because all of a sudden when you don't have that driver, you now have markets available to you that you wouldn't have before. But on the flip side, you run into these like peak scenarios where you do have crazies and you don't have a human in the car and they're going to act up and do something crazy, you know?
Yeah, no, I think you're on to something. And really, like, I think an immediate solution here for this kind of problem that I'm describing for Tesla is actually like, from a week-to-week basis, the baseline demand is pretty consistent. The companies have gotten very good. You know, Lyft, Uber, they know exactly how much demand there's going to be from a baseline, right? Like 80% of the rides, right? It's those peaks, right? Like when and where they happen. Oh, crap. You know, like last week in Los Angeles, like a quick little storm came in. It rained. Whenever it rains, people like want to take an Uber and Lyft because they don't want to walk or take public transportation in New York, whatever it might be. And so actually, like right now, about 20% of human drivers do about 40 to 50 hours a week or more. So they're kind of like what we call power drivers. And they actually make up about 50 to 60% of the total rides on the platform. So it's not quite 80-20, but it's close, right? And it kind of makes sense. Like they're out there grinding, they're working hard. So actually, like, I think when it comes to robotaxi, like Tesla could have a bunch of fleet owners that basically handle that baseline demand, right? So they know we need 1,000 cars in Austin every week. We're going to keep them busy. And then now we have these other fleet owners, or sorry, not these fleet owners. We have these other individual owners like Farzad, like Harry, who have Teslas. We can put them on at the highest earning times where it's like, it's going to be a little annoying to put this on, but you could make $50, right? For a couple hours, or you can make a few hundred bucks, cover your, you know, monthly lease, right? Because now it's at 0% or 1% APR, right? And it's like now, wow, one or two nights of driving can pay for that. And so I think that's kind of, again, where like, I think Tesla has a big advantage that like, you know, they can kind of scale, and that's exactly what Uber does right now, but just with human drivers. And that's sort of why and where they're so valuable, right? Like they could, Uber could go out and probably hire, you know, 100,000 drivers as employees and actually have them, you know, cover that baseline. And it's funny that you mentioned being a fleet owner, because actually Uber does partner with a number of very large fleet owners. And these often, you know, so some of the names are Tower, American Leasing, Sally. They're these big companies that are backed by private equity, and they'll have anywhere from thousands to tens of thousands, maybe 5,000, 10,000, 15,000 vehicles. So you can actually go, like there's a company here in Los Angeles called Tower. They actually have a bunch of black Tesla Model Ys. So if you call for an Uber black in Los Angeles, you often get a black Tesla Model Y. It's from Tower. They pay their drivers $18 to $22 an hour. They have to accept every trip they get. They, you know, they're paid hourly, and then whatever they can make off of Uber, Tower gets to keep that difference, right? If the driver's making $40 per hour and they're paying them $20, they keep that difference, cover all their insurance costs and expenses. And Uber actually really likes that model. They're really gravitating towards that because they can offload the insurance, they can offload the liability, and also too, now this driver accepts every trip. They don't like people like me because it's like, oh, I'm like, oh, is this a good trip? Oh, he wants to go there. No, you know what I mean? Like, I'm very picky with the trips that I take, right? And so I think that's one kind of potential benefit that Tesla has there, that it's like a very similar model. I think the challenge is that you can't just roll that out overnight, right? If you need 1,000 people to buy, you know, a fleet of, you know, 1,000, you know, what we said, 10,000 vehicles, $50,000 car, that's 50, you know, $1 million, right? So obviously it takes, or 1,000 cars times 50,000 is $50 million. Only 1,000 cars, right, at 50K is $50 million, right? So obviously you need someone to make some pretty big capital investments.
Go for it, Hans. I saw you came off me.
So how would you process, you know, if here in June, it looks like what they're going to do is launch the completely Tesla-owned fleet, where there, you know, it's not going to be any external drivers. And so they're obviously going to be taking that insurance responsibility that you talked about. Yep. And they're going to be owning all of the logistics and all of that stuff. How do you think about that? And then, like, what would you be looking for as far as the expansion out into customer-owned vehicles?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it'll be, if they kind of launch, you know, I mean, really any number, 10, 100, 1,000, you know, they own those vehicles and they're sort of taking the insurance and the risk and the liability. I think that'll be pretty impressive. You know, if sort of people, you know, if they come out with something, I think it's less about the number and sort of like what they launch. I know some people have criticized like, oh, if they've got, you know, teleoperators in the background, like, I don't think that's a big deal. As long as the car is like safe on the roads and, you know, like I was in my Tesla the other day. Okay. Now I know it's like the old hardware and the old software, and it came up on a road under construction, you know, like they were cutting trees or something, and the Tesla tried to like go around it and into the construction area on full self-driving. I'm like, you know, like, okay, not a big deal. Like if that was a robo-taxi, I don't think that's actually that big of a deal. They just have a teleoperator pop pipe in and, you know, move it around, and it takes like 5 seconds. And, you know, I think one teleoperator could handle dozens of cars. And it's really like, as long as it's like less safety critical interventions. And I think that's what's going to be really subjective. Like, that's not a big deal to me. Obviously, you know, you can't have a teleoperator taking over at 70 miles an hour, right? And I think that's kind of like where Tesla is, you know, the technology is much better. So I don't think it's that big of a deal if they launch with a number, you know, a certain number of vehicles, they cover the insurance and the risk and the liability. Maybe they'll have, or I think they will need some teleoperators, maybe not will, but it would be helpful. And I don't think it's that big of a deal to have some teleoperators in the background, like any quick little situations where the car, I mean, Waymo does this all the time, right? Like I was getting Leo's Tacos here in Los Angeles, and the Waymo picked me up in the parking lot and it got confused. And I think they don't tell you, but I think the teleoperator took over and it like reversed out and got onto La Cienega, and, you know, I got home with no issues. So I think like logistically, if the software is ready, I think it should be kind of easy, not easy, but it should be pretty feasible to roll out in June in Austin, right?
Do you think there is a risk to some of these like fleet operators? So you mentioned like these guys own black Teslas and they sort of Uber has partnered with them. You know, if Tesla ends up doing a network, and let's say a percentage of those are Hardware 4 vehicles, and Tesla says, okay, so you can, if you want to operate the robotaxi, you have to come on Tesla's network, right? We'll cover the insurance, you know? And then so does that open up a gigantic risk for Uber? Because all of a sudden now Tesla's stealing a percentage of the fleet that's on Uber, because I think what percentage of Uber's fleet is Tesla's? I know in the United States is like, it's single digit, but it's probably a fair number of them, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think they've ever set a certain number, but like in California, for example, 10% of, they've announced that 10% of Uber's miles are actually EV, and most of those EVs are Teslas because, well, I mean, it's the best car, the best product, and also they've got this big partnership with Hertz where you can rent a Tesla Model 3 to drive for Uber, so a lot of people sign up for that, and it's really the supercharging network that makes it so valuable. So, you know, I'd probably say like, it depends on the region, but like probably, you know, 5 to 10% Teslas in California, maybe even Texas, you know, kind of those high Tesla markets.
And so do you think that that is a risk for a company like Uber, where with Tesla sort of opening up their network, let's say, and it's obviously going to be exclusively Tesla's, is going to draw supply out of Uber and add it to Tesla, right? So it's like a double whammy effect. Yeah.
I mean, I work, we consult with a lot of fleet owners who are trying to get partnered with Uber and, you know, kind of build out their fleet and hire drivers. And I mean, one of the things I've told them is Tesla could be a great hedge, you know, for the future. Like I've been telling a lot of the top fleet owners are investing in a lot of Teslas because, I mean, one, it's like a kind of a no-brainer. It's like the best car, the best product for rideshare, but also two, as a hedge for, you know, if or when Robotaxi launches, yeah, they could plug it in to Tesla. I don't actually, you know the legality if Tesla could like require a like a Tesla, like you wouldn't be able to use it on Uber. Like, I feel like that wouldn't be okay. You know, if I buy a car and they're like, oh, you can only now use it on the Tesla robotaxi network. I don't know. It feels like it wouldn't be, you know, I don't know if legal is the right word. And also too, like, you know, Elon tends to be like in certain instances, he's like very open and willing to partner, you know, with like the supercharging network and, you know, like the whole battery thing in China. Like I could honestly see him, you know, because of his like personal mission to expand EVs, maybe he's like, oh no, you know, you can use, you know, a Tesla on Uber. I don't know. I don't really have any insight, but I feel like that might be a little tricky for Tesla to like not allow. But then of course, if it's a better experience, better product, better earnings, yeah, all those fleet owners do come over to, you know, Tesla, for example.
Yeah, I do know that Elon and Tesla, I think it was one of the master plans, and then it was a multiple times Elon stated that they specifically state that for you to operate a robotaxi, it has to be on Tesla's network.
Got
so
it.
That's the angle
they're
taking.
Yeah, I feel
taking.
Like I've seen that too.
Yeah. I don't know how successful they're going to be from a legality perspective, but I know that's where they're going. And so that's the signal for me, like when I'm kind of thinking about what's the company's end goal. It's like, okay, they are really trying to be a heads-on competitor to an Uber, yeah. Heads-on competitor to a Lyft, where
right.
They want to own a fleet. They want to own the supply of miles. And from their perspective, they think they have the best cost per mile because the scale they have with their cars, and if it's autonomous yeah. using cameras and a computer, then it's 30,000 or less a unit, and all of a sudden, yeah. you know, you have a monster.
So, you know, I guess that kind of answers my own question then, that, you know, where or how would Tesla would get all of those vehicles, right? They could kind of work with the existing Uber fleet owners. And I don't know that it really changes my analysis in the kind of Uber versus Tesla discussion. Like, I still think, you know, that Tesla is a big potential competitor. And Uber, I mean, I think Uber's AV strategy right now is basically like Uber CEO has been like open arms for Elon, right? Like every interview he does, he's like, Elon, come here, you know, like work with us, right? Like I think he's kind of scared of Elon and Tesla, to be honest. Like every single interview he does, he's like very praisive. And you know, a couple he was sort of like, oh, it doesn't seem like they want to work with us, you know, whatever, we're gonna do our thing, which he should say. But like, hey Elon, if you want me, call me, right? It's basically like what I've interpreted it as. But like Uber is on their end, I mean, their argument to the public and investors is that like, we have so much demand, we have such a robust network. And I'm bullish on their argument, right? That like, we're the best place to deploy AVs. And I think this is kind of what we're seeing with Waymo. Like they just released some numbers in Austin that, hey, the Waymos are doing, and you know, I did some analysis. They said that they're busier than 99% of humans, which sounds like a lot, but you know, Waymos are operating like 22 hours a day. So if they do, you know, one or two trips an hour, they should be busier than humans. That part didn't really stand out to me, but like Waymo can do, you know, they're kind of approaching 24 to 30 trips a day. Like they're really increasing their utilization on Uber. And not only that, like they can kind of get the best trips, right? They can kind of get like the sweet spot, like, hey, the perfect distance, no wait time, right? Like right now, if you call Waymo in Los Angeles, first party with the Waymo app, like I try to get one Friday, Saturday night, it's like a 19-minute wait. That's horrible. That's terrible. I switch over to Uber and Lyft, right? Sometimes it's 3 minutes, sometimes it's 19. Like I would almost argue that's worse, right? If it's like 3 to 19, like it would be better if it was like more consistent, like 15 minutes, 20 minutes, right? Because it's really hard to plan when I need a ride, when I need a Waymo, versus with Uber in Austin, it's the same price. Like I just call, you opt in Austin, how it works is you opt in to Waymo on Uber, and then you call for an UberX or Uber Comfort or whatever it might be, the EV option. And then if a Waymo is available and you've opted in, you get a Waymo. If not, you get a human driver, right? So like the experience is really seamless. And then on the back end, and I think that's what Uber is doing a lot behind the scenes. Like they're doing a lot of stuff on the product side, on the partnership side, to really like make their platform seamless so that they can, like, they benefit a lot from a fragmented market. Like if there's Waymo, Tesla, you know, other AV players in the future that are kind of at that Waymo Tesla level, I think that really benefits Uber. Cause like, why do I need to get in the back of a Tesla robotaxi network? Why can't I take a Waymo? You know, why can't I take a Wave? Why can't I take, you know, there's a company in China called Apollo Go that, you know, from the video, like they're doing as many trips in China as Waymo is. And like the technology looks pretty good and the cars are like amazing. They're like really nice. I think you've covered some of these Chinese EVs. It's like you get in and they got massaging seats and it's like, you know, really cool, nice, fancy experience.
I think I agree wholeheartedly with your comment that the more fragmented the landscape is, the more that benefits Uber, because the
right.
platform that wins in that scenario is the one that has the shortest wait times, and the shortest wait times is a direct function of the fleet size. So especially within the regions, right?
Well, I think, and also just think about the consumer behavior. Right now, people download Uber, they download Lyft, maybe they add Waymo. I think a lot of people would download the Tesla app. Am I going to download the Zoox app too? Like Zoox is the next company that's getting pretty close to launching in San Francisco and Vegas. Like, I don't know about that. You know, like that's starting to ask customers a lot to have like four or five different apps. So it's like, what are they going to do? They got to plug into Uber. They got to plug into Lyft.
But that's where I think Tesla has a unique advantage, because in my head, it's like, okay, the friction for you to download the app is going to be pricing. That's the wait time, right? It's wait time. Yeah. How quickly can I get the car? And then if it's available, it's going to be price. But the availability of the vehicle, if you're thinking about it from an autonomous vehicle perspective, that's directly correlated to how many autonomous vehicles you can make, right? So like the wait time is the size. And then if you are able to make a lot of vehicles, then by default, that implies you have scale. And so if you have scale, by default, that implies that your cost per unit is going to be low, right? Yeah. And so if your cost per unit is low and you don't have a driver, then your cost per mile automatically is going to be lower than anything Uber can offer, because you're yanking the biggest percentage, one of the biggest percentages. And then if we make the assumption that insurance will follow the curve down with safety, right? Yeah. Whereas, you know, you're not going to get into accidents, you're not going to get into, you know, there's not going to be nearly as many deaths because the system is always paying attention, assuming it's a safe system. Then all of a sudden,
and also assuming that it is a vehicle that is lower COGS, because you can think about like the current Waymos, you know, if it costs $150,000 to put a Waymo in the car, it gets into, you know, one third less accidents than the camera based solution. Oh, but it costs three times as much to replace, then you're still at the same insurance cost, even at increasing
levels for those. Costs are usually less a function of the actual vehicle and more liability. Like everybody wants to sue Uber. You know, I mean, you've seen the billboard lawyers, like, did you get an Uber accident? Like everyone's going to want to sue Tesla. Everyone's going to sue Waymo, right? So I think it's often like liability, like they don't even care about the physical damage to the cars, you know, respective to the liability. So that's sort of where the big savings. So like you said, Farzad, it's really like about safety, right? Like how safe are these vehicles? You know, Waymo has released a lot of data saying that basically like, hey, our cars are really safe. We're not getting into a lot of accidents. And that's sort of like, I think the thing that gets missed in like the Waymo versus Tesla discussion is people are like, oh no, Tesla's going to kill Waymo, or Waymo's going to kill Tesla. And it's like, right now they're taking like opposite approaches, right? Like you said, Hans, like Waymo is taking the high end, expensive, more technology, more software, you know, more LiDAR, everything. We're going to be really cautious with safety. They're not even operating on freeways yet. I think they could be, but I think one of the reasons why they don't, because they don't want someone to die. Like they don't want the Waymo, like someone to hit a Waymo and then someone dies and, you know, some, you know, I'm not going to throw any outlets under the bus. They're like, person dies in a Waymo, even if someone else hits them, right? I think that would be really bad PR. And so I think they've been like very cautious and conservative with their approach, and that kind of fits their business model. Whereas Tesla is kind of coming from the other side, as you guys know, right? Like a much cheaper solution, camera based, right? And so like, I don't think it's that big of a deal. Like if Waymo is ahead right now in the actual product, like Waymo is trying to come down here, Tesla is trying to come up here and meet them, right? And so it's sort of just like a matter of, you know, can Waymo come down? Can Tesla go up and, you know, like then kind of continue, right?
Yeah, but I do think because of how expensive it is to build a Waymo, the scale, like Waymo's challenge is going to be getting enough Waymos. Like you said, like they have 1,500, they're building 2,000. They're never going to match the scale.
I mean, they're literally
going to
have 3,500 cars at the end of next year. Like that's not a lot.
That's like probably not even the amount of drivers in Austin for Uber. There's
probably
more Uber drivers
in
Austin.
One of my clients, and I think we looked at Austin, and I estimated that there's 95,000 trips per day, rideshare trips per day in Austin. So that's Uber and Lyft. Waymo's doing, I estimate that they're doing about 5,000 trips per day right now. Yeah, about like 5% of the market.
Do you have any...
100 cars. They said they have 100 cars in Austin.
And how many like Uber and Lyft cars are there total to service that?
The vehicles, well, it kind of, I'd have to break it down, but like off the top
probably
of 20X, my head,
roughly, if we just go off of the miles and you extrapolate.
Go off of, I mean, the Waymos are a little bit more full-time, so it's going to be like, it would be 20X full-time drivers, but it would be a lot more, you know, let's call it like 50X vehicles, right? Because like a lot of guys go out and do 5-10 hours a week. So vehicles, you know, it'd be maybe 50X, but like, you know, if you're talking about like vehicle hours, it would be 20X.
Got it. So like 5,000 Uber Lyft drivers to 100 Waymos, something like that in the Austin metro area or whatever the Austin city area. Okay. Yeah. But that's like, you tell me if I'm thinking about this correctly. So in a world where there's fragmentation, right? And there's different players, is it fair to say that the app with the lowest wait times and the lowest price per mile will eventually take a majority of the market? Do you think that's a fair framing?
Yes. I mean, Uber, I mean, this is the whole reason why they instituted surge pricing 11 years ago, because it seems very customer unfriendly on the surface. But they know that if they have that surge pricing, it incentivizes people like me to get out on the road Saturday night so that you can get a ride and still have that 3 to 5 minute ETA, right? So ETA, so I'd say availability of cars, like that's kind of, you know, table stakes, like you have to have cars available. And then the ETA, 3 to 5 minutes, like that goal is like the next biggest thing. And then price, right? So it's sort of like ETA and price. Obviously, if you could serve, you know, an 8 minute ETA versus four, but you're 2x the cost, right? So, or half the cost, you'll wait, right? But usually that doesn't happen, right? Like people always joke like, oh, Uber's so expensive right now, I'm going to go get a taxi. Like, why do you think Uber's so expensive? Because it's Saturday night. Go try to get a taxi and they're going to be like, hey, how far are you going? Oh, hey, you got to give me $20 on top of the fare, right? It's because there's high demand, right? So it's like these situations where peak demand exists don't happen in a vacuum. There's a reason for it, right? So like if Uber's busy, that's going to mean Tesla is going to be busy or Waymo's going to be busy, right? So I think you kind of have to account for that. But yeah, I think definitely, yeah, that sounds about right.
Got it. And then do you think there's going to, like, let's say we're in a world where robotaxi is something somebody can actually purchase. Like, let's say there's commercial, mm-hmm. like there is, you know, Tesla starts doing unsupervised FSD and literally the Cybertruck starts driving itself. I can get in, fall asleep, and it takes me to my location, right?
Yeah.
But do you think there's going to be, do you think in that world there will be a fragmentation of fleet operators where you have one person that maybe owns 3 or 4 of these things and they run it out? Or do you think it's going to coalesce into these giant firms that own 10,000 Teslas and they, you know, they fleet operate, they make sure that it's clean, you know, do maintenance and stuff. Like how do you view, you know, or is there, do we need more time to sort of analyze and think about it? I'd love to pick your brain.
I mean,
on that.
I guess if we look at the existing industries, you know, whether you look at like car rentals or share car sharing or rent, you know, rideshare rentals, these people that are renting Uber and Lyft vehicles. I mean, I think it's a mix, right? Like obviously in theory, it makes the most sense that you would get thousands or tens of thousands of cars and you get to operate at economies of scale. But I think like we saw with Hertz, if you screw up on like depreciation, because all the Teslas aren't worth as much as you thought, now when you have 50,000 cars, you lose a lot more money, right? So it's kind of like good and bad in this fleet operator game. Fleet, you know, shared fleets is a very tough business, right? Like I think, you know, owning and operating assets that are highly depreciating and have maintenance and insurance and liability and you have to hire drivers, it's a tough business, right? And so I think that like we'll probably see a mix of small to medium to large fleets. You know, maybe there are situations where like, hey, you want, I don't know, 50 certain vehicles, Lucids, or, you know, you want 50 Hyundai, you know, whatever it might be. And then maybe Tesla is by far the main one. And if you've got a fleet of 10,000, you go all Tesla, right? And so I think we'll see a mix, but kind of like what we've seen in existing industries. But yeah, so I think it's still a little early and we're still kind of formulating, but that would be kind of my guess.
Okay. Go ahead, Hans.
On that note, you know, as you know, if you put on the hat of someone who is wanting Uber to succeed long term and looking at the risk that Tesla poses and Elon's so far kind of unwillingness to signal partnership capabilities in the future, do you think it would be wise for Uber to potentially start, you know, getting into actually owning a fleet of Teslas as kind of a hedge to where, you know, we own the cars. If that thing takes mm-hmm. off, then we have some ability to make money and we have some leverage in a relationship yeah. with Tesla. How do you think about something like that? Especially for, you know, since they don't do any fleet, you know, internal fleet yeah. management now, that would be kind of like a big step for them.
Well, I guess it would be a little awkward if they bought 1,000 Teslas or, you know, 100,000 Teslas and then they couldn't put them on their own network and they had to go give them to Elon's network, right? I'd be like, oh, crap.
That would be incredible.
And then I'm sure they would sue them. But while they sued them, they're like, we got an expensive fleet. We got to do something with them. That'd be pretty funny. Ironic, obviously. But I think that, you know, I've definitely seen people talk about like, hey, should Uber get into the AV game again, right? Or should Uber get into the fleet game? And I mean, I guess looking at history, right, like Uber obviously did this big AV, you know, kind of in the first wave of autonomous vehicles. And, you know, there was like a pedestrian that was like jaywalking at night and they, you know, the car and safety driver like wasn't paying attention and Uber's vehicle killed them, right? So that was like the first big death in the AV world and basically kind of like signaled like all lot of these companies falling off in that first wave. So like the first time they did AV, basically it didn't go that well. They invested and spent and wasted, I guess you could say, a lot of money. And then the other time that they did fleet, there was a program called Uber Exchange Leasing, where they basically went and financed a bunch of vehicles like Toyota Camrys and stuff and leased them to drivers. That also didn't go so well. I think they did 50,000 vehicles and lost $9,000 on each vehicle. It was like multi-hundred-million-dollar loss. And I think the challenge there, they had a bunch of drivers who came and rented these vehicles and put a crap load of miles on them. They drove like thousands of miles a week, right? Because they're trying to get their money's worth because it was unlimited miles. And then they crashed them a lot. They get into a lot of accidents. And so, you know, the last two times they've kind of gone down that path, I'm sure it's been a while, but like it didn't go so well. And honestly, I think Uber has really kind of shifted as a company, and they've kind of shifted to one that's like a little more tight on like, hey, we're great at rideshare marketplace. We're great at delivery marketplace. Like if you look at all of their, you know, earnings charts and free cash flow, like it's everything is just up and to the right. Like they're printing cash, making a lot of money, mainly off rideshare. Delivery is, you know, the margins aren't as good there. But like Uber is doing really well. I think their stock price hit an all-time high just 2 days ago. And so, you know, the company itself is doing really well with this new strategy of partnership. And on the AV side, it's no different. Like basically every week in my newsletter, I'm announcing like one or two new AV partners. And, you know, like sometimes these are just like kind of PR fluff pieces, but like, you know, it's some partnership. Like they're investing a lot behind the scenes to really like what we talked about earlier, Farzad, like for that fragmentation, like if there's other AV companies that can like figure out the technology and bring it on, like where are they going to go? Uber's going to be the best platform for that. And I think that's kind of the interesting thing, you know, for Tesla, is that like in the future, if there's a bunch of other AV companies and they can all pop on, if it's like everyone against Tesla, basically, like, do I really care if I get into a Tesla robotaxi or a Waymo robotaxi? Like, I kind of want just the best ETA, the cheapest, right? Like you said, right? So it kind of becomes more of a commodity product. I think this is one thing we've seen with Waymo. It's amazing when you take your first trip. It's super cool. After a few rides, you're just getting into the back of a Jaguar and no one's driving you. Like, you kind of get over it. You know, you really very quickly, like when we saw with Uber, it was awesome for the first few. Now everyone takes it for granted. I think with Waymo, it's similar. Like my last few Waymo rides, I'm like, hey, this is cool. This is awesome. But I'm sitting in the back of a Jaguar, like no big deal. There's no one driving, but like I'm going from A to B. And that's really what transportation is all about. It's like reliable from transportation from A to B at the lowest cost.
Love it. Awesome. Harry, we're going to have you back, man, because this was a excellent conversation. I think this is going to be one of the most fast moving, is what my gut tells me, it's going to be one of the quickest evolving, fast moving industries, this whole transportation thing with the advent of autonomy and that autonomy hitting scale. I think I think somebody like you is going to be a very important person to follow. And we need to have you back often. So I hope that's okay with you.
Definitely. Well, I think us, the three of us combining powers, obviously, clearly with my lack of, I did say at the beginning, I'm not a Tesla expert. I love Tesla. You know, I'm a driver.
You're very knowledgeable, man. You know,
but I'm also like, you know, I kind of like to put myself in like the average, you know, user, the average customer. Like,
and that's very helpful.
V13 or V14 or whatever the hell it is. Like, I bought a Tesla. Like, why doesn't it work as a robotaxi? Elon tweeted it out that it would, you know? So it's sort of like, I think the combination of the kind of Tesla experience that you guys have, and then obviously the rideshare kind of business aspect that we've been covering and bringing, because, you know, you mentioned an interesting thing. It's like, even though Waymo is out there, like, I keep telling people, like, they're not at scale. Like, this isn't what it was like when Uber and Lyft were first getting off the ground 11 years ago. It was a much different pace. They were raising $1 billion every 3 to 6 months. Like, they were expanding, they were scaling. Even like when, I don't know if you guys remember, like when the scooter craze happened a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
When Bird was the fastest private company to $1 billion. Like, even that felt a lot like Uber. Waymo has been really cool, but it's like, hey, we're going to launch in Miami in 2026. I'm like, wait, that's like a year from now. Like, let's go. Let's get moving. So I think Tesla kind of has that potential to really pour some gas on the autonomy fire because of everything, you know, we talked about, like that they already have hundreds of thousands or millions of vehicles on the road and the ability to produce 500,000 a quarter. And like, hey, maybe the margins might be very compelling for like someone who may not normally, like, I can get my Cybertruck paid for in one or two nights of robotaxi driving. All right, someone pukes in it, whatever, I'll get it detailed and cleaned, and now I've got a free car for the rest of the month. So
yep, exactly. And that's, I mean, on that note, it's just hard for me not to think that Tesla's approach really kind of is binary. You know, it works or it doesn't. If it does work, there's no one who can really compete with their capabilities in AVs specifically. But then if it doesn't work, then you do end up in that, you know, kind of world where there is a lot of fragmentation. And I just don't, because Tesla
is like, go big or go home, I guess you would say, when it comes to the AV strategy.
Well, and they're the only one who has gone all in on the lowest cost hardware setup and then huge, massive supercomputer clusters that are required in order for you to make that out of the box cheap hardware on the car actually function.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, Harry, let people know where they can find you, and then we'll wrap this sucker up.
Definitely. Well, for all things autonomy and rideshare, I'm covering that, usually doing 2-3 articles a week on my new newsletter, the Driverless Digest. I'm on Twitter at the Rideshare Guy, LinkedIn. And then for anyone interested on the more nitty gritty of the Uber Lyft things, the Rideshare Guy. So I'm pretty easy to find on the internet. Just type in anything Uber, Waymo, Rideshare Guy related, and I'll pop up on some box.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Go check him out.